Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill. How are you doing this week, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Reggie's out on assignment. I know it seems like I send you guys out on assignment all the time, but we also have other duties and other things we do outside of this show, and wish the best for Reggie and look forward to hearing from him next week. As always, especially as business begins to pick up for the front part of the season here, and as we look forward to the kickoff in 2 weeks from tonight, our show is loaded with tons of stuff. We got injuries, we got signings, we got players getting chewed out, and that's just an End Zone. Later in Falcon Zone, we'll tell you about how that game against Houston went, where we see him going, and some other injuries as well there. But, you know, let's start right off the bat with we have been kind of discussing on and off a little bit this week anyway. We're going to talk about who we think the AFC playoff teams are, plus the wild cards. And we'll hit the NFC next week. To me, the AFC is a little more cut and dry, although there's a few surprises. But is there a division you really want to start with, Coach?
No, you can just pick a division and we'll go right in.
Okay, well, let's jump right into the AFC East. Now, that would be New England, Buffalo, the New York Jets, and Miami.
New England is going to be the team that will probably win that. Believe it or not, will be the Jets. The reason I say that is because they have a new quarterback this year. So I think that when you're looking at that particular division, it's a team that stands out to me right now.
Yeah, it's to me, it's still New England's division until Brady and Belichick are no longer with that team. I do see that, you know, Buffalo's defense is good. They don't really have the pieces on offense. You know, Rex Ryan's always going to have a good defense. He's starting to put some things together with the Jets. I think Miami could surprise a lot of people, but they're starting five brand new people on an offensive line that was already kind of interesting last year. New England's going to take this division, and if anybody is going to try to push for a wild card, it probably is those Jets.
Yeah, I agree. Again, Coach Ryan has always been known for his defensive play. One of the things he has this year is that he has two quarterbacks. He doesn't have to worry about the injury situation because they're similar in their ability to play. And because he now will have that dual threat, you have a quarterback, Rich Smith, and a veteran and Vic, who will be able to sustain offensive plays with third downs and shorts because they do have the ability to run. And I think that's what's going to help keep them in a lot of games. And as long as games close, they'll obviously be winning.
Yeah, and let's see. We'll go on and move on to the AFC North. Now, that would be the Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati Bengals, Cleveland Browns, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Who do you see kind of being the front runner here?
Well, I think Baltimore still has a chance, being that they are who they are and have always been who they're going to be. Again, they stand up to me right now. When you look at Pittsburgh, it's from a team that has to win now, so they're going to be tough in the division, but I don't know if they're back there from the standpoint of the receivers. They struggled a little bit with that. They struggled a little bit in their running game. But right now, Baltimore is the forefront for me.
Okay. Yeah, especially given that Pittsburgh's two top running backs were just busted on a DUI and marijuana possession last night. That would be Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount, the appropriately named, apparently. I feel like they're going to – both those guys are going to miss at least four games. I believe this could be the second bust for LeGarrette Blount, which means that'd be a full year. I don't know that their running game, as important as it is to Pittsburgh, I don't know that it's going to be strong enough to make a big charge. They were my front runner up until late last night. I don't think Cincinnati's got quite enough firepower to stay with Baltimore, and adding Steve Smith is just going to make them that much better. It's going to give Flacco somebody he can throw to on four downs instead of two. So, you know, I think this is Baltimore for sure. If anybody sneaks up, I mean, I can't get behind Cleveland yet. They got to show me a little more. So if anybody makes a run at Baltimore, I think Cincinnati's going to be it.
I agree. Cincinnati was in the playoffs last year. They have the players in place. I think the one thing that Cincinnati is missing, in my opinion, they need another receiver. They don't have anything else outside of Brennan that is just really a primary threat when you hit the field. So if they can find another receiver where they take a whole pressure off him, I think their running game is solid and their defense is solid. But I think that's the one thing that they're missing, in my opinion, when I look at their roster, to get them over the hump. They go for them another receiver that can take pressure off, and that will require you to look at the other side of the field, then they got a chance.
So to get that right, you said Baltimore as well in that division?
Yeah, I'm thinking Baltimore.
Yeah, it's almost like the New England thing. It's like the other three teams are kind of in a little bit of turmoil, and until they turn that corner, it's kind of Baltimore's to lose at this point. But let's jump to the AFC South. Now, here we've got the Colts, the Texans, the Titans, and the Jaguars.
Okay, again, I have to go with the state team being the Colts. I think Houston looked really well when I watched them play against the battle with Fitzpatrick. A little bit of Buffalo. I think the team really is in great to him. The sleeper team in that division to me is going to be Jacksonville if start quarters. The Border gets an opportunity. I think there's an energy that he brings to the team. I think he's the brother of the chair. I watched him in preseason. The team is gravitating to him. They're doing a little extra for him. So, again, if he gets the nod somewhere around week four or five and is not out of place for them, I think they might have a chance to be a wild card.
Yeah. Tennessee, to me, is in the running for the number one draft pick next year, and that's a nice way to put it. Houston showed me a lot against Atlanta, and I know preseason it is what it is. It's still preseason, but their defense is really emerging. If they can find a quarterback, they could be interesting. Not quite as interesting as Jacksonville, I agree. I don't know that Borders is the sticking point for me. I feel like Henny could lead them to an 8 or 9 win season. They've got a ton of weapons down there, and whenever it's ready to turn over. When he turns the reins over to Bortles, the sky's the limit. I like that they're not rushing him. But, you know, Andrew Luck just is one of those once-in-a-generation guys, I think. And not saying there's not more of them, but you don't let Peyton Manning walk unless you think Peyton Jr.'s coming in the door. And this kid's just got this extra gear, this extra gene to take over games and make these comebacks. And he makes great decisions. He's first one in, last one out style. I think Indianapolis is going to take this one as well.
I don't think it's anything in the culture as long as they can stay healthy.
All right, let's move on to the last division, arguably the biggest logjam, the AFC West. That would be Denver, Kansas City, San Diego, and Oakland.
Okay, by far I got to go with Denver just because of where they were last year. They still have all of the pieces in place. That football team, Kansas City is moving in the right direction. I think they can push the division on the AFC. Absolutely. Kansas will be right on their heels. And again, you have to also look at San Diego being a possible wild card. They have always been a consistent team. Nothing great about them, but enough to keep them in the playoffs every year.
Yeah, I think until proven otherwise, even though I've got Denver taking a small step back, I don't think they're quite as good as they were last year, but, you know, that may actually work in their favor. But Denver, to me, is still the front runner in this division, at least for right now. I mean, that could change in the next couple weeks. You know, hopefully throughout this year's end zones we can kind of keep track, and I'm making track now, but we'll kind of, you know, every four games or so, we'll still reevaluate and see where we stand at that point. Kansas City did learn they're a lot deeper at a lot of positions and a lot more experienced, and to me, experience is a lot more important than talent sometimes. Oakland's still figuring out a few things, but they're coming along, and to me, I've actually got San Diego as a wild card team anyway. As far as the AFC is concerned, I think, let's see, what was I looking at? Oh, the kind of wild cards I had picked out is San Diego and somewhere between Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville is probably, I think, going to be that number six seed on that side.
I agree with you, and I think again, if Boston gets the chance to play, and I'm going to call it early with this young man, if he gets the chance to get into the game and become the starter by week five, they're going to give a real good push to those other two teams that we're predicting as wild cards.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, we'll keep track of this and, you know, throughout the year, and not just really to see who's right, but to see the development of some of the things we're talking about, because a lot of times it's not necessarily about who was right or who was wrong, but it's pointing out things that people haven't seen or haven't thought about, and hopefully we were able to do that and kind of set it straight for some people, you know, so they look at it a different way, to not just go, well, you know, Denver should just run over that division. Well, maybe they do, and maybe San Diego emerges. Phillip Rivers is no slouch of a quarterback. He's always had weapons around him, even though the coaches seem to change every couple years. But you also look, and maybe Oakland puts something together and makes a run. We've talked about Jacksonville emerging. There's a lot of teams that are either on their way up or on their way down that can still factor into a playoff scenario. Right, and as we kind of move along from the AFC, we go into our one of our top stories, at least for this week, and that Arizona defensive end Darnell Dockett is out for the year. He tore his ACL. For a defense that is emerging the way Arizona is, they're in a rough division, being in there with St. Louis, San Francisco, and Seattle. How big a blow is this to the Cardinals?
I can tell you right now, it's a huge blow. I watched this young man over the last 2 years really emerge as a leader on defense. Again, I think they have enough personnel on that side that they will be able to be open. All of the other pieces of the combat defensive unit step up and void the gap that they're going to miss with us.
Right, and, you know, he is pretty important here, but they do have that depth that we've talked about before. It's a pretty big injury for them, but nothing they can't overcome. I still see them as the emerging team out of the NFC West and a possible playoff team as well.
I agree. Just because of the division, I want to correct myself. I said Duckett, I meant Dockett. But because the team is out that particular division, remember, it has already produced the Super Bowl champion. So when you have Andy, you had San Francisco in there as well. So when you're playing against those teams twice a year, and they're making up a large portion of your schedule, then it says a lot about where you are right now in the vast scheme of things in that conference. So now they have a strong, not only a strong division, but they're in that part of the division that has produced, you know, some consistent Super Bowl appearance teams. So that's into consideration. That's why I'm going to give them basically a thumbs up, because they're one of those American teams that on any given Sunday, they'll be able to beat you quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot more emerging teams than there are teams on their way down or are still trying to figure it out. But, you know, we wish the best for Darnell Dockett. He's an exciting player to watch for sure. And, you know, we wish the best for them out in Arizona as well. We'll move on to, you know, here in a few minutes, we hope to be joined by former Falcon Harper LaBelle, who can give us a little light on a few things coming up. I guess commentators, it's kind of hard to categorize these guys, but Phil Simms and Tony Dungy have come out to say that they will avoid using the term Redskins on air. Is this really going to start being a divided issue?
My coach, I think they're taking a proactive move toward the right direction. Being that it has been an issue, or it has been at least presented as an issue, they're going to take the high road this and say, I don't want to offend anybody. I'd rather be politically correct and take a chance and straddle the fence with it until a decision is made. I think this is a move in the right direction. I think it's just showing that they are very mature in their broadcasting years. Although they don't have the long ones out there right now as far as their years, but they're smart enough to see now that if they make the decision and move in that direction, hopefully their decisions will be the same, especially to that point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if this thing keeps going and you got Dan Snyder kind of, I don't know where he's at on this really, and it's got to be a rough situation. But, I mean, there's other things that he should be worrying about than his team name. But, I mean, it's almost to a point where he might as well just go on and bite the bullet and change his name or change the name. And just think about all the extra revenue here. I mean, suddenly he can rebrand himself and rebrand the team. In rebranding the Redskins and renaming them, he's able to make all this extra money because people will rebuy jerseys, especially with people like RG3 on your team, Brian Arakbo, those kind of guys. Like I was saying, I mean, it's almost to a point where it's. I'm not saying to give in or give up if you're Dan Snyder, but just go ahead and change the name and be positive about it and, you know, just start selling more jerseys and more tickets for the new team.
I agree. I mean, it's something that he's going to have to take into consideration, and I'm sure that there's been a big pushback. And we already know it's becoming a media frenzy, and it will as we get closer to the season. So, again, with us speaking of Mr. Simms and Mr. Dungy, saying they're going to remove it from their vocabulary as they speak about Washington, it's already saying, you know, what direction it's going to probably end up going anyway.
Exactly. And the next thing, you know, as we transition out of that, hopefully that does blow off a little bit. We're going to go ahead and bring back one of our favorite guests. Glad he's got time for us this weekend to join us. Always like to hear what he has to say and his unique look at everything. Right now I want to bring on former Atlanta Falcon and 92.9 The Game host as well, Mr. Harper LaBelle. How you doing, Harper?
Jeremy, hey, I'm doing great. Thank you.
It's like I said, it's good to have you back on. We always like your take on everything because we get that former player mentality and everything, and I promise we won't bore you to death with questions about Brett Favre and Bill Goldberg and some of the other great people you've played with.
Yeah, I think we need to keep it a little more modern, right? There's not too many gray hairs that want to talk about that anymore. But, hey, if you don't beat me up too badly like some of our listeners did for the way the Falcons played last weekend, boy, I'd greatly appreciate it because we took a riveting from most of the Falcon fans. I'm sure you've been well aware of that.
Yes, we were. And I promise you we will not throw anything your direction. And I was able to witness some of that pounding you guys were taking. Wow, they jumped on you quickly.
Yeah, it was almost as if I were playing and had reasons to be let go or something else of that manner. But, yeah, it was a pretty poor showing by the team. And for me, the great equalizer is that it didn't count. It didn't matter. It was a preseason game. I get that it was not a good performance. I understand. I'm not making excuses for the club or anything. Yeah, they didn't play well. But you know what? In 20 years, in 20 minutes, no one's going to care. How are you going to play against Tennessee? And what are we doing right now to get ready for the Saints? That's the big issue.
Exactly. And as you bring up the Saints, that actually gets to the next topic we were coming up to. The Saints tight end Jimmy Graham has decided, even though there's an NFL rule now where you get fined and penalized 15 yards for doing so, he decided after each of his touchdown catches this week to dunk over the goalpost. I don't know if you guys saw the second time it happened. The first time he got a small few words from Sean Payton. The second time, Sean Payton made a point to go over and tell him what he thought about it.
It was one of 22 penalties on the evening, and I know you guys have probably looked at some of the results so far. The referees are definitely getting their airtime. I think it'll have to decrease at least the number of flags that we're going to see in order for it to be competitive, in order for it to be network-friendly, to keep games at right around 3 hours, which is what they actually prefer. But you're right. Jeremy's antic, if you want to call it that, the second time did bring the ire of Sean Payton, and he was hurting the club. It was not an accident. That one was a little bit more on purpose, and so I think that he was, from a coaching standpoint, he was corrected and told that that's not acceptable, and it's up to him to see how he does this from here on out. But whether it be a fine from the club or from the league, it's pretty adamant right now that they're cutting back on your celebrating again.
Well, and Coach, from a coaching perspective, what is the most effective way to get through to Graham? Is it chewing him out like Sean Payton did?
Yeah, well, I think that he had some, you know, some choice words for him. As a coach, we have our very colorful ways of getting our points across. and I think he made his point. I think that he basically was just following a tradition that, if you remember, Gonzalez used to do. Tony did it all the time. And now that when you're trying to do exactly like Mr. LaBelle said, is you're trying to cut down on the penalties and you're trying to make it, you know, network friendly, you don't have room for all of those penalties, especially when you already have 22 penalties counting against you. The ones that you most definitely can eradicate, you want to get them corrected quickly.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the most effective thing. And I think after Sean Payton went over to him after that second one, that Jimmy Graham realizes, you know, it's kind of like when you're training a dog. Oh, I'm not supposed to do that at that time. Okay, no problems. But
yeah,
as we go,
Jim. I just think that at this point, you know, also Coach Payton had to make. He most definitely had to make a statement. Remember, he just got this contract. There were some things that were going on. He's a leader on this team, and he wanted to make sure that he got his point across that you are a leader on this team, and you need to always conduct yourself as one.
Yeah, and as we transition from one elite pass catcher to another, the Bears were able to sign wide receiver free agent Santonio Holmes this week. Now, if you watch the Bears-Jacksonville game last Thursday, they kept bringing up that we know who number one and number two is on the wide receiver chart for the Bears. There wasn't really an emerging three. Is Santonio Holmes the answer in Chicago? We'll start with you, Harper.
Well, I think the offensive line is the answer. If they're able to protect whoever it is, and Jay Cutler has been their quarterback when healthy, and their defense is pretty stout. I'm quietly going to wait to be impressed with them, but I'm already in that boat. I think the Bears have a lot to prove. If they keep their quarterback upright, just like in here, or what Atlanta does for having a third option, down the field as opposed to checking down to a running back, I think that'll just make their offense even that much better, which is really a rarity. Even the Super Bowl Bears didn't have numerous deep threats. They had a fantastic running game in Walter Payton. You could give it to Matt Sui for an extra yard or two. You go to Willie Gault over the top, or you go to Ken Marjoram for that third down reception, but they really didn't have that extra effort guy. To bring that in now in Santonio is probably just going to be a godsend for what I think Jay Cutler would be just licking his chops going, thank you, it's about time. Now I've got really more options, and it's going to open up our offense tremendously.
Coach, do you see that adding Santonio Holmes as an additional weapon is, I mean, in Trestman's offense, and now that Cutler's getting a little more a little more accustomed to it, so to say. Adding Holmes, is this going to clog it up too much, or is this going to be this extra weapon like Harper just said?
It most definitely is going to be the extra weapon that they need. Again, they have not always been having that threat down the field. Now they have the ability to get vertical real fast, and with having Mr. Holmes there and his experience, they have the ability now to be able to eat up chunks of yards, knowing that they can throw across the board, and they have not had that opportunity.
Yeah, definitely so. And as I said, appreciate having you on, Harper, and since I know you are on limited time, you know, for all our listeners who don't know all the amazing things you do on a weekly basis, you were talking earlier about three different games you were calling this weekend. Can we get a little more information about those?
Yeah, sure. Real brief. I'm real fortunate and have been now for a couple years to be a part of the Corky Kell Classic, and anyone in Georgia that's been around for a little while knows that that's really one of the keynotes of the year, especially at the beginning of the year. I didn't realize this, but I thought that I had played in the first game at the Georgia Dome when I was a part of the team in 1992, but they had already had some high school games. And between Corky, who was great friends with Dave Hunter, the two of them started this idea and a concept. Let's start playing some games at the beginning of the year that have a little bit of meaning and significance and see if we can't market it right and get some of the better teams in the state to start playing one another. And that's what they did. And it started just as an idea, and someone said, let's do it at the Georgia Dome. And it took off from there. And here we are in 2014, and there's seven games back-to-back starting tomorrow night. I'll be a part of the first one. I'll be announcing for the Creekview North Paulding game, and then everybody else that plays throughout that weekend. There's some really good teams that have had either a tremendous tradition of high school football, like Valdosta will be there, and they're the winningest team in the state. Titletown USA a couple years ago from from ESPN. Valdosta's got a terrific program. They may not win the state this year, but everybody respects and knows what they can do. And that's what this is about, just getting some really good teams together and having them play one another. Coach, you'll confirm this, I'm sure. When you go into the weight room and out on the track and when you have your meetings in April, May, June, in July, you have a little bit more oomph when you know you're going to be playing in a big game to start the season off. And so I think this is a great way for the coaches, for the student players, the student body, and then for parents and everybody that's a fan of that school to be a part of it.
Absolutely, it sets the tone for the season.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to reach out there and say good luck to North Paulden. They would be the closest school to where we are, to where I am relatively. Didn't get a chance to go there. It wasn't a high school when I went through high school. But I've actually been on their campus. I've helped out the baseball team a little bit with some renovations they did. And they're a good group of kids over there. They do some real good things, some good coaches, good teachers. So I want to wish North Paulden some good luck. But quickly, Harper, before you get out of there, we had talked earlier about we picked kind of who our front runners were for the AFC playoffs and everything. Do you really have anybody sticking out from that side?
Well, it's hard to knock what Denver's doing, although I think that just in their division, I think San Diego might be a player this year. I look for Pittsburgh to rebound. I really don't know what to think about Baltimore. I just don't know. If you can protect him and give him time, I think that Luck is going to do some great things in Indianapolis. I just don't think anyone else in the division is ready to fight there yet. I'm worried about Pittsburgh if I'm in that division. I like Mike Tomlin and everything that he does, and I think that this may be a turnaround year for them. You know, the funny thing about it, though, is it may be one injury. It could be 14. It could be like what the Falcons had last year. And everybody who predicts really good things could be looking at a dismal season. So it's all very fragile. Doesn't mean a whole lot now, but obviously there are some teams that are showing signs. And, boy, when you look at what Denver and they did it to San Francisco in their brand-new stadium when they opened it up, granted, it was a preseason game, but Denver is hitting on all cylinders very early in the year. I'm scared if I'm playing them on my schedule.
Yeah, I've kind of said as much away from this show that Denver's kind of the incumbent until proven otherwise. But to me, there was New England is the only team on that AFC side that I think could really give them a serious run. Do you see anybody topping New England in the East?
I don't think Buffalo's there yet. I think the Jets are more talk than anything else, so that just leaves the Dolphins. And they've been trying to build for a couple of years. I certainly hope that they would give them a chance, give themselves a chance to win against, or at least split in the series. You know, they may not win. I don't have it in front of me. I don't know when they play in New England, but if they can play the Patriots early when it's hot, down in Miami and take advantage of the humidity and everything that they've been practicing in, which the Patriots have not, I think that they can sneak one, win a ball game down there. And then if they play well up in New England and sweep the series, that gives them a real big potential. Brady's getting older. Still don't know who he's going to be throwing to. That he's never had a big-name guy. I mean, Deion Branch is a good player, but really who else has he had in the wide receiving corps? So He does it all with very limited tools around him, and that just makes it even harder for me to root against a guy that is as good as he is and is so competitive and just a great player in every realm, shape, and form.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, in week one, New England will be going to Miami, and that's a 1 o'clock start down there, so it will be nice and hot by the time they start playing.
Yep. You thank you for pulling that up. So I definitely hope that Miami's faithful are praying for a 94-degree day with 96% humidity and watch the Patriots melt before their very eyes. I know that's what they were hoping for, but Patriots are going to be prepared for that. They're obviously going to give everything they have. It should be a good game, though.
Well, I can't speak for Miami weather, but if you prayed for that kind of weather around here in Atlanta, you'd probably get it on a daily basis right now.
The start of summer has just kicked in, if I'm not mistaken. We've had cooler than normal temperatures up until this weekend. I believe it's going to be as hot as it has all year.
Yep, another fun thing about Atlanta. We've always got unique weather. But like I said, I know you have to go and everything to get ready for all those games, and look forward to hearing and seeing you on a lot of those broadcasts. But how do you, your quick recap of the Falcons game against Houston and how you see they could improve against the Titans this week?
Well, Coach, you'll understand this a little bit. A few years ago when I was playing, we had one dismal performance during the regular season, and Jerry Glanville was the head coach, and he says to us at the end of the ball game, he goes, "I'm going to burn the tape. I don't even want to look at it. This was so bad, I just don't want anything to do with it." And I hope you don't either. We're going to go to work on Wednesday, and we're going to get ourselves better and make sure this never happens again. And I think that somewhat of that, in just fun and jest, if you take what happened in Houston last week, and I'm not even going to talk about it. a few guys are going to be rated and might make the team or might not make the team based on that, but I think this weekend is really the make or break for most of the guys. And so I'm looking forward to guys, especially at home, taking advantage of the elements, getting some rest, getting their legs back under them, and playing a completely different type of football than what we saw. Let's just forget that Houston even happened, and let's get ready for Tennessee. You put some pressure on the quarterback, stop the run game, get some three and outs, and then I think we could score 25, 35 points maybe before the first team guys are done.
I agree, Harper. No, I'm sorry, Jeremy. I agree.
No, go ahead.
I have been in those positions. I've had to be a part of those types of games. The coaches, when we're going to the coaches' meeting, it's a dead silence. I mean, we kind of sit there and we just go, "Did that just happen? And do we really want to look at this?" The head coach normally will pop it in, just so that you know what happens behind the door. We will watch probably about 15 minutes of it. He will get sick, and he will pop it out and throw it in the trash. And that's all we will say. There will be no more discussions about it. We'll go to practice, and we will pick up where we left off. And normally you don't have to say anything to players, and I think, Harvey, you can agree to this.
I think in the locker room, it's a spoken, unspoken, we know what we need to do. And we don't have to be told it was bad, we know it was bad. And that's kind of how it goes.
It's a weird, ugly feeling, isn't it? You're watching this, you go, as a coach, you're going, when did we ever allow anyone to get away with this or that? Or what on earth were they thinking? How on earth do you take a two route and turn it into a seven? What was that? And then you got to, just like a relief pitcher, if you give up a home run, you got to forget it and learn from it, but forget it and hope that it never happens again. Otherwise, somebody's job may be on the line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was actually the first thing that came to mind after I watched the game for the second time. That I'm not even going to mention which game now. Just hopefully that the players can move past it as well. But as I watched it, I was like, man, you got to throw this tape away. You can't. There's things you learned, but you don't need to see it again to learn it again. You already know what you need to do. And of course, that Titans game is on the CW Network, who has picked up all the preseason games Saturday at 7. And if I'm not mistaken, Harper, doesn't Georgia State start next Thursday night? Is that correct?
Wednesday,
that's right.
Yep.
I knew it was coming up.
Yep, yeah. Everyone that would be liking college football, loving college football, or not even thinking about it too much won't have a choice. Starting on Wednesday, thank you, the Panthers will play their first game of the season at the Georgia Dome against Abilene Christian. Then you've got a couple of Chick-fil-A games. We're going to sneak in a Hall of Fame into the Atlanta Hall of Fame with the site. It opens up, College Football Hall of Fame. That's going to be opened on Friday. Ticker tape type of ceremony there. And I've heard from although I haven't been, I'm really looking forward to it because the interactive portion of this, the taking technology and state-of-the-art abilities and putting them together in a fan experience, I hear it's second to none. And people that know more about it than I do say, we're going to blow your socks off. It's going to be a beautiful place to go to and a real good experience and a value at that. And then, obviously, Bama, West Virginia, Boise State, you got some really great teams are going to be here all weekend long, and then Georgia and Clemson aren't that far away, and Georgia Tech starts their season. So, boy, strap it on, fellas, because it's going to be an interesting weekend, and it's going to just take off from there.
Yeah, definitely so. And for all the pro wrestling fans out there, Abilene Christian would be the home of one John Bradshaw Layfield. You can next time you're on Sports Jeopardy with Dan Patrick, you can get that question right. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. You learn something every time we're around Jeremy York. Congratulations. you let it happen again.
Yep, and I haven't even gotten into the trivia question for the show, but that's a lot later on. And Harper, I know you're busy. I know you got to get going. So we appreciate you being on this week, and good luck with everything. I know I'll be watching and listening and hope to hear from you a little bit later in the season.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your understanding. Yeah, I got three games in less than 12 hours that I'll be doing, so I hope you don't mind. I got to get a little studying in, and go Birds. Falcons should do well this weekend, rebound from that, and then anytime in the future, I look forward to it. Thank you.
And that was Harper LaBelle of 92.9 The Game. He hosts a lot of the weekend stuff, as well as calling the Georgia State games. He's got the Kell games this weekend. I'm sure I'm missing something in there, and also former Falcon. Always good to have him on. When we come back, we'll be jumping right into the Falcons' own portion of our show, and a lot of fun things to talk about. We will talk about that game I wouldn't mention a while ago. We'll preview the one coming up and tell you if the injury to Sam Baker could actually turn into a good thing or not. But for Coach Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
Falcon Zone with Coach Haywood Hill. I am your host, Jeremy York. I had a great first segment with Harp LaBelle joining us for the end zone and going over the AFC playoff teams, some of the injuries and everything. Always great to have Harper on. We wish him all the best and look forward to all the amazing projects he's got coming up. But you know, Coach, let's just jump right into, as we mentioned last segment, the game that hopefully will not be mentioned maybe after today. That recap game against Houston, or as I like to call it, the Houston Texan exhibition.
If you're looking at, there are always the three phases to the game. You have offense, defense, and special teams. One of the things that you have to do to be successful in winning a football game and having a successful season, outside of trying to dodge the injury bug, is you must win two of those three phases of the game, every game. In this case, Atlanta lost all three phases of the game, okay? They would give up a lot of yards with the defense. It was just chunks after chunks offensively. I don't think that the first group ever converted a third down. Clowney was everything that you would look for in a number one pick. He proved it against Sam Baker, who was an experienced offensive tackle. Although he was coming off of injury, he just could not handle his speed. If I'm not mistaken, the injury, when I looked at it, I think came off the bull rush, where he told the fella, because he did squat on him. He basically, you know, kind of was high in his play. Again, he proved it when he came around the corner, and I think he hit Antoine Smith on a handoff almost at the time he got the ball. When you look at it again from the special teams, if I'm not mistaken, a punt was blocked or a field goal attempt was blocked that went back for a score. They also were missing on that same play. They didn't have enough players on the field. They were short one, which is the kicker's responsibility. So I always kind of make sure that all the personnel is there, and with the punt and the kickoff return part of the game, I don't think that Hester did what he should have done and what he was paid to do, which was take those chances. As long as that ball is in field of play, he gives them the best opportunity to get beyond the 20-yard line and let the kick out of bounds. So with that being said, it was a lot to say about the game, but I think from a coach's perspective, they did what they had to do. They saw some bright spots in the game. They saw a lot of lows in the game. But more importantly, it was a game in which they were down there all week practicing with Houston. So it gave them an opportunity, the Falcons and the coaches have an opportunity as well as the players, to see some different faces. So it put them in a different environment. And now I think from that point they move forward, and I think you see a whole different football team that will come out against the Titans.
Yeah, and I know this is called Falcon Zone, but, you know, as I look at my notes, and everybody in the studio can see it here, the first note that I wrote down whatsoever is in all capital letters. It's got three exclamation points at the end, and it simply says Clowney. Like you said, he not only played like the number one pick that everybody thought he could be, but he truly does, if you saw even Hard Knocks and some of the other stuff of them working out together before the game, you could very much see that he lives up to that title of gamer that you call him. And, you know, in practice, it's not that he doesn't go full on in practice. It's that he just, almost a minimal effort. He makes it look good, but even Jake Matthews knew just because J.J. Watt's not on the field, Clowney was, and he was looking to disrupt something. And it was the back-to-back plays where he welcomed Anton Smith to Houston with a shoulder to the sternum, which was just, I mean, yeah, he was unblocked, but at the same time, it's still a heck of a play. And then on the very next play, I call it the Clay Matthews, because Clay likes to kind of wrap around you like a boa constrictor and pull you down, and that's very much what Clowney did right there. But, you know, going on to some of the actual Atlanta notes, they were kind of weak on the left offensive line. Mainly it was Baker, and I don't know if he had already partially hurt himself before the big injury, but it kind of looked like he was playing, I'm not going to say soft, but he was playing a little gingerly kind of to start with, and I didn't know if it was just a great rush coming off that side or if maybe it was a precursor to him about to hurt himself big time. The Atlanta defense had a good start. The problem was, as good as they were playing, and they were playing a lot of zone, it looked like, to start with, they were allowing a lot of tight-threaded passes, which for some reason Ryan Fitzpatrick was throwing together. He hasn't really been known for that, but he did quite well. They were trying to swat and knock the ball loose a lot more than just actually block and tackle somebody. Jaquizz Rodgers had no real momentum. Anton Smith actually had a decent push, except for the aforementioned play. You know, Julio was easing back into his groove. Roddy was almost in midseason form already. Ryan had to force some passes, but overall he was solid. He's where you want him to be. I mean, there were some just really good things going on, and the only thing that really concerned me is they're averaging one touchdown a game in the preseason. Now, the only team that I know of that's doing any worse than that is San Francisco, who has totaled like 3 points, I believe, in 2 weeks. I mean, is this really a concern at this stage of the game?
Well, no, I don't think it's a concern, but one thing you do have to do is you have to go in and treat it as if it's like a regular season game, because you are evaluating players, and that's the whole purpose of the preseason. You get an opportunity to get some tape on them players, see them in game mode and game situations, so that these determinations can be made. I think that as you move closer to the end of preseason, and now you're down to cuts and you're down to finalizing what your roster is going to look like, then you start seeing different things. Again, a lot of times at this stage of the game, the playbook is very vanilla, or I won't say the playbook, the plays that you're putting out, because you want to see certain situations. You don't want to tilt your hand as far as your concern. You have things that are staple in your offense and defensive setting. But, again, a lot of this stuff is generic, because, remember, you have a lot of players in as rookies and free agents not know your system. And they might not be around after, you know, the first two preseason games anyway. So as you move forward in preseason games, you're beginning to add a little bit more of the playbook. You're starting to refine some of the things that you're doing, because you're getting ready for that first week of the season. So I don't think there's any concern, but you are still being competitive and you still want to have good showings because you're a professional athlete.
Yeah, and, you know, Osa Urmonura made some plays. It was looking like he was starting to, you know, getting in good form for the first time in a couple years. Sean Renfrey, to me, should be the backup at this point, only because he's the better he knows the playbook a little better. I'll give T.J. Yates some credit. I know that he's a good quarterback. He's currently still trying to learn the system. He hadn't been here long enough, I think. Freeman had good runs. Let's see. The defensive ones and threes were pretty good. Overall, the second stringers seemed to give up the most yards, but they were in the longest. I don't know if you got a chance to see Jeff Matthews, the fourth-string quarterback, play. It was about 3 minutes to go, what I call garbage time at that point, where it's not going to affect the outcome much. But Jeff Matthews is quite the slinger. I mean, he wasn't afraid to throw some balls in there. But like I said, when you're in garbage time, sometimes those parts of the game that don't really matter that much, you can kind of take some risks.
Absolutely, you can take those risks because you're not in with the ones. So, you know, again, you take those same type of risks when you're in with the number one defense and or with the number one offense. So, again, going back to Yates, I think the one mistake that he made, and hopefully he's corrected within himself, as a player is that he wanted so desperately to show well against his former team. And in the process of doing so, I think he was trying to do a little too much. He pushed the ball a couple of times in areas where he should have not done so, and I'm sure that got shown to him on film. So coming back into this game, and I'm assuming that they'll play him a little bit more just to see what he has and make sure they're comfortable with him falling into the number two spot behind Matt Ryan, will be looked at against Tennessee. But, you can kind of see it. He was very frustrated, and he was trying to force a little bit too much on some situations that he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, and the other thing, I've noticed it on a lot of games, and I know it's because of they're starting to not let a lot go as much, but the flags that were thrown, especially in this game, to me, there was so much laundry on the field, I feel like it should have been sponsored by Tide.
Well, one of the things I can tell you, and we spoke of it in end zone, was that the referees are most definitely, and or the officials, let me say that, are most definitely going to play harder in watching certain plays. For instance, the five-yard rule, the hands off, you see, it's illegal to say the hands. It's coming, but now the rule has always been there. However, they're going to make sure that you only got that 5 yards of restricted space, and anything that goes 6 and beyond, they're going to flag. So what has to happen now is where corners have been cheating a little bit in playing up at 6 with the hand, giving them a little more time. Now it's 5 and off, and what you're going to see with the defensive coordinators to continue to not have that as an issue, they're going to make them play an off man. So now they'll be sitting at 7, and at that point, you won't have to worry about the hands on. It'll be just a done deal. Or if they're going to use press, they're going to only stop at 5. So now, once the person runs past you at that point, or they break the press, it's a done deal, and your hands are off. So it's going to be a little bit different for corners who have developed certain styles and techniques. However, you're going to have those side judges really paying attention to when the receivers are engaged with cornerbacks, what's going to be happening.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad they're letting everybody know they're not letting as much go. I'm very much a proponent of letting them play it out and stuff like that, but, I mean, there's certain things that I guess one of them is the Seattle rule, and it's about how corners cover and stuff like that, and Seattle said they're not going to do anything any different, and, we'll see as that goes along as well, but I'm kind of glad they're calling a little more. I'm also glad that at least for these next two preseason games, we're going to start kicking extra points from the 2-yard line again instead of the 15. I think the little experiment showed us that, yeah, there will be a few more misses, but, it's kind of messing with parts of the game to me to move that field goal.
Well, absolutely. I can tell you that as that moves into it's great that they have the preseason to evaluate that. But as you look into the season, I'm trying to remember if it was Houston's kicker, but someone had a kicker that just continued to miss extra points. And, again, you're talking about where this 1 or 2 point difference can win or lose a football game. So I think moving it back, they're starting to see that how this can affect the game tremendously. And I think being that it is deemed an extra point versus a field goal,
right,
this is where they probably said, well, guys, we're not real sure if that's going to, factor in and it's just making that big of a difference. And now you're talking about kickers probably kicking the legs out over time. And so I think it was a good move to square to move it back to where it originally was a decision to go from there.
Yeah, I'm pretty glad they're going to move that. It was interesting for a second. As I called it kind of the backyard rule, as far as you're tired of your neighbor beating you, so you make up a few of your rules for the backyard game to see if you can kind of pull it even. And when there really wasn't much of a change, you just go back to what it was normally. And, we'll get into the Sam Baker who tore his patellar tendon in his left knee, not to be confused with the right knee injury he had last year. How big is it having Sam Baker out?
Well, naturally it was going to be huge because they were looking forward to having Mr. Baker join that offensive line and anchor with the experience. But as I said it at the beginning of the season, and I said it more especially in draft, I've always said that I thought Matthews would be the future at left tackle. I said that before they drafted him. I said that upon him being drafted to Atlanta, he was an immediate answer to the right side. But remember, he's played on both sides. So that was one of the reasons why he was a high draft pick. Taking into consideration, he's going to step right in. Believe it or not, he's like Clowney. He's a gamer. Gamers from a coach's world are blessings and curse in the same breath. What do I mean by that? From the blessed side, you have a natural ability and a natural talent to just do what you do at the position. From the curse part of it, they're very mundane players in practice. They're not going to be the same guys in practice that you see that show up on game day. They just turn on a switch, and it's only about 3% of players in any sport that are just labeled that. So I think, again, when you look at what he's able to do and him moving to the left side, and remember, he's already played the left side in college, so it's not an unfamiliar position for him. He's very well groomed at the spot. He has football in his DNA. I think the surprise is going to be that when you look at Mr. Holmes, moving him to the right side at tackle, where he can get help with the fullback to that side. He's more athletic in the run game, so you can see a lot of that with him pulling from a guard position where he plays. I think he's going to be the most improved player. I am already saying he's going to get that award, and I don't think it hurts Atlanta line at all. I think it's just going to prove why they went with that pick with Matthews to begin with.
Right, and to give the quick tie and the quick answer as to why Jake Matthews moved from left to right and right to left tackle at Texas A&M is because he played with such talents as Luke Jockel, who was the seventh overall pick 2 years ago by Jacksonville. He spent most of last season injured. He was a good kid. I got a chance to talk to him when I was in Jacksonville. He'll cheer up their line as well. But, you know, when you have talent like that, especially at a university, having that versatility of a guy is really big. And I believe Jake has a little brother that's on the offensive line. I think Cliff, maybe. I can't think of his name exactly. But he plays for the Texas A&M offensive line as well. And from what I hear, he's like a little Jake. But, you know, like we said, Jake's going to move to left tackle. They did sign offensive tackle Pat McQuiston, who's a veteran of the league. I think this is just to add depth and other options. More than likely, Lamar Holmes is the starter at right tackle, as he's pretty much been announced. You know, we've talked about this a lot as far as Lamar Holmes and stuff, especially off the show. This is really his chance to shine. I believe he was originally a right guard. We were trying to figure that out earlier. And if you're listening or tuning in with us right now, we'd love to hear if he was a right guard or a left guard. But getting back on that right side is actually going to be great for him. He was able to get all that experience last year. Like we said, we know Jake can play either side. So moving Lamar to right, I actually think they have a stronger line right now than when they had Baker.
I mean, I can't disagree. I mean, with Baker being hurt over last year, and you know, Holmes having to step in and play, I think part of Baker's thing is that, you know, one thing about contact sports, whether it be football or boxing, you can only practice so much, and then you have to go live play. And you got to understand that Mr. Baker didn't have, you know, a lot of time last year, if any, only a few games, if I remember. And so now he's coming back in trying to get himself ready, and he has to catch up with all of the games that he lost last season and get himself in condition on top of the rehab. So when you couple all those things together, and then you're going against the number one pick in the draft, who's a proven man on the field, in a speed rusher like Clowney, it was a lot for that very first comeback. And unfortunately, it caused him another season-ending injury, and I wish him the best. But again, you know, I think they had enough depth at the line, and the draft pick was the right pick. This is why you do your homework. This is why the scouts are out on the road 280 days, 365 a year, and all of this information comes back, and this is why when you go and you make that selection, you have done your research, and he is already paying dividends for him now.
Yeah, definitely so. And like I said, I feel that their line is stronger now than with Baker, and I'm not saying Baker was bad. I just, you know, he's kind of been a little bit of a disappointment since, I believe, being a first-round pick a couple years ago. And I felt like when they drafted Matthews, and I believe you said the same thing at the draft, in drafting Matthews, he was kind of the replacement for Baker anyway. So with Baker going out, he moves over and replaces him. Now your only question is right tackle, Lamar Holmes, if he can nail that down, or at least, you know, keep him afloat long enough till next year. It's a pretty deep draft at tackle the way it's looking right now already. They may draft a right tackle next year.
Well, they most definitely put themselves in a good position two ways. One, they still have a lot of money left under the cap that they can negotiate with and bring in an experienced right tackle. They feel that somewhere during the course of the season they're not satisfied with what they have. Two, they didn't give up any draft picks to move up in the draft. So, therefore, as they go in to make sure they still have a lot of picks in the first three rounds that they can answer any question across any portion of any position for that matter for themselves, and that's always a good thing.
Right. I think they're in a pretty good spot, and, you know, we've already talked enough about that game at Houston that, you know, there's things you can learn for the most part, dump the tape. But moving on from that game, they have the Tennessee Titans on Saturday. It's a CW game, as CW Network has carried what will be all four games. Kind of cool they had all four preseason games. That was going to be Saturday at 7 p.m. What are you really looking for out of this game against the Titans?
Basically, all of the mistakes to be corrected. I think that's going to be the priority, is that they come out fast, or they come out quick. The first thing that they have to answer from a coach's perspective is that they have to be able to convert third downs with the one. I think that is by far the biggest concern. Everything else is something that needs to be tweaked in assignment recognition and just ability. And they play the twos a lot because you must understand that as they go through these preseason games, you actually have a roster on how you're going to play in the game as far as the time is concerned, because you want to make sure that you're giving them the best evaluation. So, again, those that emerge will probably play a little bit more, but you're going to start seeing the ones a little bit more now, and then as you move into the second half of the game, you start seeing twos and threes that they're starting to put into the mix that they're going to feel very comfortable with. Again, I think that they have to come out on the offensive side of the ball, and they have to convert third downs. That is the first, first thing that they have to address. Defensively, they got to start getting sacked on a lot more pressure. That's the second thing they have to address. And third, but not least, they have to start in the special teams getting better yardage out of Hester. He has to field these balls. He has to bring them back up over the 20 so they can answer for why they brought him in to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the Titans are, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I feel that Tennessee is competing for the number one draft pick next year. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, in that, you know, they may only be one solid draft away from kind of rebounding, especially in the division they're in. But Atlanta is kind of in the driver's seat in that the few problems they have, they either already have another option on the roster, or given the right before the season cuts that are going to happen within the next couple weeks, they could easily find, you know, maybe another right tackle. They could easily find maybe a third running back or a better option at returning kicks. So really the pressure is on those guys, as you said, you know, the Steven Jacksons to rebound and get back in shape. Devin Hester to actually get the ball past the 20. You know, some of these guys, that pressure is really on there. For Lamar Holmes to step up and be the shutdown at right tackle. Because if not, there's going to be other options cut from other teams that Atlanta could easily zap up.
Well, one thing is for sure, when you're a professional athlete, that's exactly what they pay you to do, is to be a professional. It has nothing to do with your repetitions in practice. It doesn't matter how much time you get in the game. One thing as a professional, and I tell all professional, you know, football players, you're paid to perform, whether that's one play or 10 plays or 50 plays. You're paid to be prepared to perform. So when your number is called and you're out there, I don't care if it's for one play, you're supposed to perform as a professional for that play. So, again, trust me, you're interviewing for other teams. The rosters have not been set. No one name is in stone, but a few players, and that's only about 10% of the roster. So when you take into consideration you have a 53-man roster and only, you know, 10% of that roster is going to already be solidified, there's a lot of jobs still open.
Yeah, exactly. And as we're kind of winding down here in the show, we had talked earlier about Hard Knocks, and I made a list of some of the notes and things we took away from it. Just go through those real quickly. Hard Knocks is slowly becoming a lot of people's favorite show, at least on HBO, while stuff like Game of Thrones isn't on. But Matt Ryan told a dirty joke to the other quarterbacks in the room. I thought it was kind of funny. We've learned that not only is Matt very passionate, as he's gotten in a lot of people's faces, and he's really screamed and yelled a few times, you know, not necessarily just to scream and yell, but to get the point across that we're all here for the same reason. Now let's start playing like it. But the fact that he kind of dropped a dirty joke on them like that, it caught them off guard, and it was funny to hear his personality come out. A lot of interviews you hear, he doesn't necessarily come across as a big personality, but the joke was funny. And I wish I could repeat it, but I can't. You'll have to go back and watch the third episode of Hard Knocks, or you know, if you want to hit us up, if you see us in public, I'll happily tell you the joke. Just know it was pretty funny. It showed Freeman with the dehydration thing, and the thing that I took away from this is the trainer at one point stopped, and they were able to get this on Hard Knocks. They stopped, and they're shooting him from back behind them, and he said, "What did you eat for breakfast?" And Freeman said, "Nothing." He goes, "What? No, really, what did you eat for breakfast?" He goes, "I didn't eat. I wasn't hungry." He goes, "Look, this is the NFL. You have to eat. I don't care if you're hungry or not. See what happens? You don't eat breakfast. Now you're missing time on the practice field. I'm going to have to hook you up to an IV. I'm going to have to make sure you're okay. You could miss other reps, maybe other opportunities, all because you didn't eat breakfast this morning." And it just reiterates things we've said on this show, and especially having Harper and some of the other guests on. We always talk about nutrition being very important. Maybe kids will latch on to that no matter if you're hungry or not, make sure you're eating breakfast every morning.
Oh, I agree. It's the most important meal of the day. And as a professional athlete, you have to take care of your body. That's how you make money. So if you're doing things, if you're neglecting your ability to make money, then it's going to show, and it's going to hurt financially.
Exactly. Some of the lighter moments. Willie Moe had his freestyle. Somebody was, while he was in the trainer room getting taped up or untaped or something, he was sitting on the trainer table. He was freestyle rapping about all kinds of different things. It was really kind of cool to hear that somebody was doing a beat for him, and to kind of show his personality that way, and that he's kind of a nice lighter guy. They had the three main wide receivers went on a bowling trip, which was kind of cool. Harry Douglas has got such an odd delivery and odd grip. It's actually close to the way I bowl. Mine's a little more weird than his, but it was kind of cool to see him bowl similar to me. But it's showing the unity of these guys hanging out, and it was good to see them all doing that. Reedy, the wide receiver and possible punt returner, as they were walking into the Texan stadium, the mascot tried to give him a high five, and Reedy completely ignored him and left him hanging, which was very funny to me. I don't know how Houston fans took it, but I thought it was really funny because it seemed to really bother the Texans mascot. It was fun to watch Jake versus JJ in practice, and also there was a candid conversation. I'm pretty sure it was on purpose, but it was still candid. Mike Smith and JJ Watt were talking, and there's kind of a backhanded shot, but it's the same way it was kind of a compliment, so I guess a backhanded compliment. J.J. Watt says, "Hey, your little right tackle, your rookie," and I thought it was kind of funny that not only call him little or your rookie guy, and he said, he looked at Mike Smith, and Mike Smith's like, "Yeah, you know, good pedigree, great technique, and this and this," and J.J. just looked at him, he goes, "He's going to be a good player in this league." And I felt that J.J. Watt being kind of the premier defensive end pass rusher at the moment, for him to look and go, "That guy's going to be pretty good. You know, he's given me about all I can give him right now." And I felt that was a good pat on the back that Jake Matthews knows what he's doing.
Well, absolutely. I don't think anybody is expecting anything less but greatness from him. Again, you know, I pray that he has a a very long career in the NFL, and he can stay healthy. That is always the key, is just staying healthy. Again, you know, for a lot of rookie guys, even the exceptional ones, the one thing that you have to still look at is the fact that they're transitioning from college into the pros, and now you have the best of the best every game instead of just a few games of the season.
Right, and I hate that Reggie couldn't join us this week. Like I said, he's on assignment. He had some other things come up that he needed to do. I felt that this particular comment he might have got the biggest kick out of, so when he hears this a little later, I hope I get him laughing here. But I was reminded, especially by Hard Knocks, as they recapped that Houston game and other stuff and the whole thing, that the Falcons were kind of like that song, The Wheels on the Bus, except for they didn't go round and round. They were taking off, and they were pushing this bus uphill with no wheels on it whatsoever. That's what that game felt like. They were going uphill with no wheels on the bus.
Well, that's a tough obstacle to climb a hill naturally, just with your own body weight. But then to be pushing a bus with no wheels makes it worse.
And I mean, that's what it felt like. And I'm not saying they played bad, because I was still seeing effort out there. Very much like the Jaguar team last year. It's like, well, you can look at the scoreboard and see that they're losing. You can look at the record book and see, well, they lost this many games. But I never saw a lack of effort. I never saw anybody giving up. I can't speak for everything, because we weren't right there on the sideline. But that's a good sign to me. When you see nobody giving up, everybody's pushing hard, everybody's trying. They're trying to do the positive thing, and you're getting everybody on the same thought pattern and on the same mission. And I know as a coach that's difficult to do, whether you've got 15 people on your team or whether you've got 500, trying to get everybody onto the same push, so to say. If you are pushing that proverbial bus up the hill with no wheels on it, the more people that are into the same thought pattern on it, the easier it's going to be to push this thing up.
Oh, I agree. I think that this game right here was the game that actually made Atlanta have to see themselves that way. I think that the coaches don't have to say anything. I think it was best that this game came early in the preseason. So now they have the other preseason games to go right in and now have to say nothing, because they have this now on their resume. You know, we played bad, and now we know what that looks like when we play even worse. So, again, not to harp on this for a long period of time, I think they now know that. And so now the coaches shouldn't have to say anything. I think you're going to see a lot of competition in practice this week. And more importantly, they're just ready to get back to the preseason game and get this bad taste out of their mouth.
And like I said, as we wind down, I had forgotten. I could have actually asked Parker this question as well. But I'll go ahead and throw it out there. The in the zone trivia question this week centers around Browns quarterbacks. Are you ready for this one?
Okay, I'm going to try. Let's go.
If Johnny Manziel, well, probably when Johnny Manziel starts for the Browns this year, or besides him, how many current starting quarterbacks have they had since 1999? Like, since 99, how many quarterbacks have started at least one game for the Browns?
I'm going to go on a limb, Jeremy, and I want to, for some reason, say 6. And I could be totally wrong, but that number just stands out.
Since 1999, the Cleveland Browns have had 20 different quarterbacks play at least one game. Hey, when I first saw the stat, I was like, I don't know about this. I checked on it with about 5 other sources, and I was like, wow. And when I brought it up to a coworker today, he said, well, when's the last time they've had a true franchise quarterback? And I said, my guess would be Bernie Kosar, who last played in like 97, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kosar was the last franchise quarterback they had, but I had no idea that it was that many quarterbacks. So, I'm hoping that Manziel is their answer being in since 97. I mean, that's a lot of years to pass and a lot of personnel to go through at that one major position.
Yes, as important as quarterback is, that's by far something they really need to get together, or they need to figure out. But that's going to do it for us this week on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Appreciate you joining us this week, Coach.
Absolutely. It's been fun.
As always, it's always great to have you and Reggie on. We'll have Reggie on next week, and he can catch us up on all the things he's learned. And we appreciate Harper LaBelle of 92.9 The Game and Georgia State and the Cal games. And, I mean, really, Harper is kind of like the Ryan Seacrest of Atlanta sports media, I guess. He's doing so many different things. But we appreciate him spending a few minutes with us earlier. And for the coach, Haywood Hill, I am your host, Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.